and police as a necessary infrastructure of ensuring security in the country. Thanks to the unity and constructive and sincere cooperation, the manifestations of the Iranian armed forces' deterrent power is evident all over the country's border areas, he stated. The senior commander also hailed the active contribution of residents of border areas in upholding security, which he said has frightened the counter-revolutionary elements. Thanks for joining me in this episode's news section. And now, back to Layla.
Here's what Gharib Abadi wrote. I expect you, Madam Commissioner, to counter the instrumental, politicized and selective approach in the field of human rights. Apart from condemning illegal and unilateral sanctions against the Iranian people, especially in providing the necessary equipment for the police forces in their unequal campaign against terrorist groups and international traffickers, as well as condemning the martyrdom of law enforcement personnel by these groups and traffickers.
In a joint action with the judiciary, we announced the 40 deaths to the UN officers. By documenting this issue, we want to remind the West that they're taking a selective and contradictory approach towards Iran. While Iran is dealing with these issues and paying the costs, they refuse to help under excuses ranging from humanitarian issues to sanctions. The sanctions are posing challenges for us. We can't get the equipment or drug control headquarters and security and law enforcement agencies need because of the sanctions.
Iranians are alarmed over Afghan drug traffickers crossing into Iranian territory. However, in August of 2021, Jalal Settar, a deputy commander of the Iranian Police Border Guard, stressed that Afghan immigrants are treated with respect and dignity and are often returned to their home country. Every day, an average of 2,000 Afghan nationals are requesting to enter Iran from the borders, he said. That's because they fear a new civil war since the Taliban took over the capital Kabul on August the 16th. Although the Taliban have promised to establish a comprehensive government comprised of all ethnic groups.
There are many challenges threatening our borders, but there are some major ones, including migrants coming in from countries that can't create ideal living conditions for them, like Afghanistan, where one group has taken the helm of the country and is yet to form an inclusive government. The other is smuggling both goods and drug trafficking. Smuggling goods can severely affect and undermine the rules and regulations of our economy.
In the meantime, a lack of a regional organization dedicated to fighting trafficking is dearly felt. In my opinion, Iran should convince regional countries to form an organization against the smuggling. The same thing that Europe has done with its three institutions that even monitor the entry of migrants who can be stranded for months along European borders. A considerable number of the migrants are usually deported despite getting there after making dangerous journeys through the Mediterranean, which kills thousands of them. The European institutions are responsible to prevent this.
All said, the border police official Settare expressed an added concern, warning of plots by the United States against Iran in cooperation with its puppets in certain states in the southern shores of the Persian Gulf.
Iran can't convince the international community with mere words. In my opinion, to put pressure on them, Tehran must open a free corridor for them so the Western nations that are consumers of illegal drugs can understand what Iran is up against. It's no joke. Iran has been paying $5 billion a year to fight illegal drugs. That's apart from the human cost. That is killing 1 to 1.5 law enforcement officers every day.
On the Pakistani side, end 2021, General Qamar Javed Bajwa described terrorism as a common enemy of Iran and Pakistan, stressing the need to activate a joint committee on border security. He also stressed the need for closer cooperation with Iran on issues relating to Afghanistan, especially in the fight against terrorism. Over the past decades in Iran, the use of drugs has been a major source of social harm, such as divorce, crime and infectious disease. To combat the present rise, in spite of conditions caused by the coronavirus and harsh sanctions, drug detection increased by 41% in 2020, thanks to efforts by anti-narcotics police.
The international community's actions haven't been proportional to what the Islamic Republic of Iran has been doing. As I told you earlier, Iran has been spending $1 billion a year to fight this, but the United Nations contributions have been something between $12 to $15 million. Compare this sum with the budget Iran is spending.
To take a look at police action in the capital, in May 2021, the Iranian border police got to seize more than 38 kilograms of various types of drugs from individual traffickers at Imam Khomeini International Airport. That was by means of the new body scanner secured by UNODC Iran from the donating government of Japan. There was a considerable 250% increase in drug seizure since installation of this new device by the end of the Iranian year 1399. That's 20th March 2021.
One of the excuses they make for the politicized and selective approach is the Islamic Republic's harsh treatment of drug traffickers. I think this is an excuse because the West disregards two issues. First, Iran considers distinctions in dealing with people involved in the illegal drugs trade, the addict, who we call substance abuser, and the other is the trafficker. The West doesn't recognize the difference in our dealings with the two types of people. Iran, in its comprehensive document for treatment and prevention of drug abuse, recognizes the right of treatment for addicts. The harsh response is aimed at traffickers.
To move westwards in showing the Iranian challenge cross-country, in May 2021, an Iranian officer was martyred in a clash with armed outlaws trying to cross the country's western border in Kurdistan province. Iranian troops were patrolling the borderline in Dadanakhi region near Marivan when the armed clash erupted, General Alireza Marzbani said. The border guards did inflict heavy losses on the hostile armed elements in the clash, sending intruders fleeing to the mountainous areas on the other side of the border. The Iranian Border Police, the IRGC Ground Force, and the Army Ground Force are tasked with protecting Iran's land borders. This country does have more than 6,000 kilometers of common land borders with Pakistan, Afghanistan, Armenia, Turkmenistan, the Republic of Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Iraq.
Considering the enormity of the threats, we believe we have to decide on the defense and security budget separately from the public budget. We need to manage the security budget before dealing with expenditures and revenues. We believe that we must not allow our defensive powers to be undermined. Armed and security forces can do their jobs well if they're concerned about their economic and financial security.
That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. With any results or new incidents, we'll do another show on the same. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
ما
martyr Soleimani will live on forever and his enemies will disappear in history's dustbin. January 5th, 2022.
یه نفری گفته بود که شهید سلیمانی برای دشمنانش خطرناکتر از سردار سلیمانی است. درست فهمیده بود.
Someone once said that Martyr Soleimani is more dangerous for his enemies than General Soleimani. He understood correctly. This is really the case. Those who martyred Shahid Soleimani, dear martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and their comrades 2 years ago thought the case was over. The enemies thought by assassinating them everything was over. But you should look at what condition they are in today. Look at the situation of the US. They fled from Afghanistan in that way. And in Iraq, they are forced to pretend that they had intended to withdraw their forces. Of course, our Iraqi brothers should pursue this matter vigilantly. They were forced to announce that from now on, they will only play an advisory role. In other words, they are acknowledging that they will not and cannot have a military presence there anymore. You should also look at the status of the US in Yemen and Lebanon.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
جریان ضد استکباری در منطقه، جریان مقاومت در منطقه امروز از دو سال پیش پر رونق‌تر و شادابتر و امیدوارتر داره حرکت میکنه و کار میکنه.
The anti-arrogance movement and the resistance movement in the region are moving forward in a stronger, more dynamic and more hopeful way than 2 years ago. In Syria, the enemies are faced with a dead end. The enemies in Syria have no hope for the future. These are blessings from that dear innocent blood.
از قول شهید نقل شد توی سخنرانی گفته بود که کسی که شهید زندگی کنه شهید میشه.
Shahid Soleimani was quoted as saying, he said this in one of his speeches, that a person who lives the life of a martyr will finally become one. And this is how he really lived. He truly lived the life of a martyr. I have been reading a book about some of the characteristics of this martyr. One of his old friends has written a book entitled The Soleimani I Know. Interesting stories have been written in this book. For example, he has written the grandchild of one of the martyred friends was going to be operated on. He went to the hospital and waited for the operation to finish. The mother of that child said, "Well, the operation is over. Haj Agha, you can go attend to your affairs now." He answered, "No. Your father, the grandfather of this child, went and was martyred in place of me. Now I have to wait here in place of him." Thus he waited until the child regained consciousness. He left when he was sure the child was all right. This is how he behaved with the families of the martyrs. But his behavior was different when dealing with the malicious and the corrupt. Inside the country one way and outside the country another way. For instance, in the southern part of the country, in Jiroft, Kerman, the things he did in those years were amazing. The strength he showed and the decisive, forceful moves he made were such that when he would enter an area and the enemy would become aware of his presence, his mere presence would ruin the enemy's morale.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost.
say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witches!
Turn here now.
We will resist.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
The United States does not have a universal health care program. The government does not provide any health benefits for citizens. Therefore, anytime a patient gets medical care, someone has to pay for it. So the health care issue has been one of the most contentious ones at the center of politics in America. There are, of course, opposing viewpoints among conservatives and liberals, but by the time these differences are resolved, many patients keep suffering the consequences of this political storm. One particularly vulnerable group is those with diabetes. One critical drug for these patients is insulin, and it happens to be really expensive these days.
The one thing that stands out is that among all major developed nations, it's pretty clear that the United States comes in dead last.
On the other hand, I think everyone, especially experts, should be skeptical that they know the answer. Because what works in one country or one setting doesn't necessarily work in another.
So, you know, there are aspects of the Australian system I like. There are aspects of the English system I like. But I don't think that there's a system we could just bring over here and install like a new fridge.
U.S. insulin crisis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I am your host, Daniel Arya, and in this episode, we'll focus on insulin prices in America and efforts underway to lower them to a reasonable rate, just like ones in many other developed nations. In this episode, I'll be joined by Dr. Margaret Flowers, Director of Popular Resistance, to discuss this very issue. Our second guest in this episode will be investigative journalist Abraham Marquez. Now, along with our guests, we'll try to get to the bottom of the crisis that many analysts believe has brought shame upon the United States, one of the richest countries on our planet, where healthcare is expected to be a right belonging to everyone.
Is healthcare a right or a luxury? It's a vitally important question, but before you respond, allow me to challenge you a little. I'll start with a story. In 2015, I was offered an opportunity to spend a year training in one of the world's best cancer hospitals in the US. This was a huge privilege for me, and I was really excited to go. The only strange thing was, when I was filling out my starting paperwork for the job, I was being asked questions like, did my two young kids have any pre-existing illnesses? I was also informed that even if they were completely medically well, I still had to pay about $25,000 a year in health insurance, or I wouldn't be permitted to work there.
Insulin has become a symbol of the high cost of healthcare in the U.S. Insulin prices have been steadily going up within the past decade in the United States. Many people in the country cannot afford the drug, as the average price for one vial of insulin is hundreds of dollars. However, most diabetics would have no choice but to spend a huge sum of money on 2 to 4 vials per month. But why is insulin so expensive?
Our bodies need insulin to metabolize glucose to create energy. Access to insulin means life or death for millions of type 1 diabetics like myself. But since 2002, the price of insulin has more than tripled.
The price of insulin has tripled during the last decade.
50, 60 years or more with production of insulin by pharmaceutical companies, and we have no generics.
Now, when it comes to insulin,
One of the main reasons why it's so expensive is that it's a very valuable commodity for a vulnerable population. There's a population of patients who simply cannot use insulin as a luxury. It is a necessary item for survival. And in this context, they will pay anything to get access to it. Coupled with that, we have only three companies controlling most of the insulin that's currently used in the US. That creates a virtual monopoly. So a monopolistic product that is very essential for a population to survive is going to together cause high prices. We also have a situation where, because of various middlemen, there's synchronized price increases, so that the same insulin that was sold for $20, over a 20-year period, it's increased to more than $300. And that price increase is partly because pharmaceutical companies really need to keep increasing the list price in order to provide appropriate rebates to the middlemen. Finally, there are many patent problems where the same insulin has been over-patented over and over again, which prevents biosimilars and others from easily entering the market, and there are delays in biosimilar insulins coming into the market. So we have barriers to competition, which are also causing this problem.
And now the complex and profitable healthcare sector is not easy to read. Determining the reasons behind astronomical prices of insulin today demands a deep investigation of not only the market, but also the history of drug development. Why is insulin so expensive in America compared to other countries on par with the U.S., for example, in Europe?
I think for your viewers, it's important to understand that in the United States, we pay about 10 times more for insulin than people in other wealthy nations pay. And this is in large part due to the fact that we don't have a healthcare system that actually is about health. We have a very privatized corporate healthcare system that really is about making, you know, profits for the corporations and doesn't have any interest in the health of people. So the prices are not high because of, you know, any innovation or production needs or anything like that. Insulin is not expensive to make. It's been around since 1923. It's simply because there's a large population of people who need this medication and a monopoly of pharmaceutical companies that are making it, and they know they can get away with charging whatever they want.
10 times higher. Insulin is an essential hormone that regulates blood sugar. Without insulin, the human body is incapable of regulating how much glucose enters the cells, and the cells could therefore starve. In healthy people, insulin is produced naturally, but life without insulin could be impossible for people with advanced diabetes. Such patients have to inject insulin on a daily basis in order to be able to regulate their glucose levels.
When I tell you this story is about a black market between the United States and Canada, you probably have images of drugs and booze in your mind, but it's about diabetics who simply need their insulin.
So insulin is, you know, a life-saving necessity that, you know, in capitalist America, big pharma has full control of our healthcare system. And because of their influence and their control of the healthcare system, each year their goal is to make more and more profit. Their goal is not to meet the needs of the people. And that's why we're seeing a lot of these commodities being even more pricier each year.
Every year, 1.5 million Americans being diagnosed with diabetes, and more than 9% of the population are currently living with the disease, according to the CDC. What risks are people with diabetes facing in the United States, considering the fact that some resort to rationing their insulin doses due to the high price of the medicine?
It's really a devastating thing here in the U.S. You know, in 2019, I think it was around 87,000 people have passed away from diabetes. And these are the same politicians who are not only making life-saving medicines not available to American people, but it's the same politicians that are denying it to Venezuelans. In 2019, I think around 40,000 Venezuelans died from diabetes, too, from not having access to insulin. So we're seeing these same politicians who are denying Americans a life-saving medicine. They're also denying it to other people, other workers across the world.
Whatever you're doing right now, stop. And for the next 90 seconds, imagine what it's like to be Landon Johnson.
I've got a lot of this insulin.
He's a type 1 diabetic, being forced to ration his insulin. He's 23 years old.
Just make it last.
His family is struggling so badly right now that they don't even have running water.
Morally, it kind of kills me not being able to take care of myself, you know, because, I mean, I live in a crappy house with my dad. We don't have running water right now. I can't afford to even buy insulin, man.
Only three companies, Novo Nordisk, Sanofi, and Eli Lilly, produce insulin in the country. And many activists believe that the monopoly they have on the drug is the root cause of the high prices. Of course, the companies claim their pricing processes are independent. Yet many remain shocked at why such an old drug should end up in the market at such a rate for the consumer.
I'm not optimistic about it. Of course, this is a significant problem, and people have been really, you know, making a lot of noise about it and putting pressure on Congress to do something. And in the version of the Build Back Better bill that passed the House of Representatives, it does have a provision so that people who either have Medicare or private insurance would not have to pay more than $35 a month. Now, typically, in the U.S., it can cost more than $300 for one vial of insulin, and so people are spending, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 a month.
This is while the average price for the drug in Japan, Canada, Germany, France, the United Kingdom, and Australia all range from around $7 to approximately $15 per unit. So what does the fact the cost of insulin production is much less than its price say about health care and corruption in America?
The healthcare system in the United States is not about health. It's really about making money for these industries, whether it's the health insurance industries, the pharmaceutical industries. And so they really, there's no system in the U.S. that regulates the prices of medications like other wealthy nations, and even non-wealthy nations have some sort of way to control prices. There's no rationale for the prices of medications in the United States. It's simply what these corporations can get away with, and Congress has really done nothing about it. You know, these pharmaceutical corporations, you know, lobby Congress to make sure that that doesn't happen, to make sure that they're not regulated. So it just shows that, you know, our system is really broken, and healthcare is not treated as a human right or a public good in this country.
While the illness is becoming increasingly common, data suggests that insulin prices have not always been this high. Today, the ridiculous prices of insulin has caused concerns, not just among people with diabetes, but their loved ones, the whole society, and more lately, those in power in the U.S.
This would only help people who have insurance. And now that the bill has gone to the Senate and is basically stalled there, it sounds like we'll either get nothing or they may continue to whittle it down. And it's likely, I mean, it's 100% likely that these pharmaceutical lobbyists are going to be in there as that happens, trying to make sure that they get rid of this provision, which really only helps part of the population. People without health insurance have to pay the full price, and they're the ones who can't afford to do that.
Many are concerned that due to the high expenses of insulin, people refuse to inject the amount of insulin enough to control their diabetes, which could end up being fatal. Indeed, the lack of affordability for the drug has so far led to several high-profile deaths, which have hit the national and state news. So, how do you think the Build Back Better initiative could solve the problem of insulin in America, and how do you expect it to go forward?
Yeah, the Build Back Better plan, I think what it's exposed to a lot of American people is that the Democrats are not united. They are divided. We're seeing that, you know, the original plan was somewhere around $4 to $5 trillion, and now it got watered down to like $1 or $2 trillion. And they're removing a lot of other essential stuff from the Build Back Better plan, like access to dental, to vision. There's a child credit of $300 a month that they're also removing as well. But it's just a clear example that the Democrats are only, their only interest is to continue to make major profits for these corporations. Because when it came to the military budget, there was no discussion of how much money should go in there. There wasn't even a fight, and there was a $760 billion into a military budget that's only killing even more and more people around the world. But when it comes to concessions for the working class, you know, it's a debate now.
The medical researchers who patented the invention of insulin in 1923 offered a drug that could be affordable for even the poorest of people suffering from the disease. The fact that the price has increased so dramatically is a shock to most doctors and activists in the world. In reality, long after the patent expired, the price should have fallen thanks to competition in the market and the introduction of generic brands. Yet, that has not materialized. But long after the cost of original innovation of insulin has already been defrayed, the drug is becoming inaccessibly expensive. This is while the product has not really changed since its invention, except for the packaging and means of delivery. Generally speaking, why is healthcare and issues related to it so politicized in the U.S.?
Well, this is an issue, almost everybody in the United States is impacted, unless you're extremely wealthy. Either you have suffered, struggled to get healthcare, or you know somebody who struggled to get healthcare. So this has been a number one issue for voters for a while. We have two major parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, and basically they just use this issue as a way to go after each other. And neither one of them is really doing what is necessary. So the Democrats will talk about how they think people should have health care, but then they don't do anything. The Republicans, will use fear measures. They'll say, oh, the Democrats are trying to put in place socialism, or they're trying to take away your freedom, or there's going to be rationing. But in reality, we have rationing of health care in the United States, but it's based on ability to pay, which is like the cruelest way to ration health care. And so both of them just use it to go after each other, but neither one of them is doing what is necessary.
In the latest efforts, U.S. lawmakers are touting a proposed cap on prices in the framework of the so-called Build Back Better initiative, which also includes spending on health care, family leave, and climate change. Democrats behind the initiative claim it'll lower the price of insulin at $35 a month for people with diabetes, but some critics believe that the issue has been overhyped and therefore simply not true.
Yeah, when it comes to what's politicized in the U.S., it's always going to be something that's a social program for working class people, whether it's healthcare, if it's housing, if it's education, or if it's fitting the needs of people who are battling COVID. It's always going to be politicized because they don't want to help the poor, they don't want to help the working class. But like I had mentioned earlier, when it comes to the military budget, when it comes to funding police, it's never politicized. There's no debate about it. They move on to the next topic because they don't want people to start questioning why are we giving the military $700 billion a year? What does that do? What can we do with that money every year? We can use that money into helping the poor, helping the homeless, helping our veterans. And so when it comes to what is being politicized, like I said, it's always going to be social programs that help the poor.
Whether or not the initiative manages to decrease prices remains to be seen. A vision that diabetes patients have spent years fighting for through nonprofit initiatives like T1 International's hashtag Insulin for All campaign. How should the country's healthcare issues be resolved? And what could be next for healthcare in America?
Yeah, I think even more and more Americans are starting to realize, and definitely in the last few years, the failure of our government. It's not a successful government, it's a failed one. It's failed to meet the needs of the people during a pandemic. And we can just look and to see what China's doing. You know, when the first pandemic happened, they built, 10 hospitals in a few weeks. They've only two people died from COVID in 2021 in China, while here it was around 415,000 people. And we're hearing even more numbers this month as well. So I think more and more people are starting to detach themselves from the Democratic Party, are detaching themselves and realizing that this government's a failed government and are looking for alternatives to either organize and to fight back into building a real workers' power here in this country.
President Biden has called the price of insulin outrageously expensive, but there are other prescription drugs that still have astronomical prices. The president hopes that his initiative, dubbed Build Back Better, could address the issue.
Now, what we're seeing is greater privatization of our healthcare system, more privatization of even our public systems, Medicaid and Medicare. So we're in a situation like we are with many of our basic necessities in the United States, because we really are a failing state that's not providing, you know, for the needs of its people. So we're in a situation where we have to continue to fight and to press for not just health care, but the many of the other changes that we need, you know, a system that provides education and housing and those types of things.
The functionality of the plan will indeed need to stand the test of time, as the profit-based healthcare system often finds a way to bypass regulations. Now, the powerful big pharma is increasingly getting bigger and more powerful, just like any other corporations with no end in sight.
Yeah, this is really criminal. This is a common illness in the United States. It's one of the most common chronic illnesses for children. And as you've mentioned, you know, people are skimping or not taking doses. About a quarter of people, one out of four people with diabetes, either take less medication or skip doses altogether. And this is leading to complications. Sometimes it's death, but other times it can be bringing on complications of difficulty with vision or kidney disease or having amputations because of infections. And so this is really reducing the quality of life for people. It's reducing their ability to be productive and to provide for themselves, and it's completely preventable.
The political back and forth over healthcare involves not only Republicans and Democrats, but also the pharmaceutical industry. Meanwhile, patients who are in desperate need of highly expensive prescription drugs such as insulin are caught in the crossfire with no meaningful relief. After all, every government is responsible to take care of the more vulnerable portions of society, and healthcare is one aspect of everyone's life.
One of many tens of thousands of physicians in the United States that believe we need to have a national universal public health system, much like many other wealthy nations have. We refer to it as a Medicare for all, and it's something that we've been pressing for, but we currently have a situation that's not favorable to that. President Biden campaigned explicitly saying that if Medicare for all passed in Congress, he would not sign it into law. Members of Congress, I think, particularly Democrats, because of that, even though their base is very much supermajority support that position, they're not willing to go against the president, so they're really not doing anything.
Going to Mexico to buy insulin is kind of a last resort to be able to live another month or two. That's my only option at this point. ¿Tienen insulina Humalog? No? Okay.
Paloma is one of a million Americans with type 1 diabetes who requires manufactured insulin to live. And now, she's down to her last vials.
Now, leaving healthcare at the mercy of the free market, which is basically built on strictly profit, is clearly putting pressure on the shoulders of people at the bottom of the hierarchy. Here on We the People, we like to wish well for all the patients and pray that they find good health, well-being, and prosperity in their lives. Well, thank you for staying with us, everyone. Please stay tuned next week when we come back with another episode. I'm your host, Daniel Aria. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left you last Friday, and here is Ayah 31 and 32 of Surah Tur.
قل تربصوا فإني معكم من المتربصين أم تأمرهم أحلامهم بهذا أم هم قوم طاغون.
Say, O Prophet to the disbelievers, wait, I too am waiting along with you. Is it their intellect which prompts them to say this, or are they a rebellious lot? Remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last week, we said it is the habit of the disbelievers to try to belittle the prophets of God by calling them names and accusing them of madness or being fanciful poets in a vain bid to prevent people from being guided to the path of God. In their blind enmity, the pagans of Arabia, desirous of seeing the end of Islam, wished harm and used to say that they were awaiting a fatal accident for Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. God, the Almighty Protector, however, made their devilish plots go awry. Thus, as is clear by the ayah that we recited to you now, the Lord Most High commands the Prophet to tell the intransient disbelievers to wait and see the terrible results of their evil for themselves, since he himself is awaiting whatever divine providence has decided for him of the two excellent things, that is, either victory over them or martyrdom in the path of God. The next ayah refers to the chiefs of the pagan Arabs who imagined that they were persons of reason and intelligence in opposition to the logic of the Prophet. It addresses all those who regard themselves as reasonable and knowledgeable, asking them whether their reason and intelligence leads them to deny the manifest truth. When it is clear that such denial stands against reason. All this means the deniers of truth are nothing but a rebellious and disobedient lot, since their reason only follows their evil desires. From this I will learn that, number one, patience and the passing time make the results manifest, whether these are the benefits for the truthful or the terrible fate of the deniers of the manifest truth. Number two, intelligence is the gift of God and should be used in a proper way to ascertain the truth rather than make it follow vain desires on the pretext of possessing knowledge and reason, since real reasoning never goes against reality and facts. Number three, it is disobedience of the rationality of divine commandments that turns the deniers of truth into rebels against logic and real reasoning of the prophets. Now we present you ayahs 33 and 34 of the same surah.
أَمْ يَقُولُونَ تَقَوَّلَهُ بَلْ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ فَلْيَأْتُوا بِحَدِيثٍ مِثْلِهِ إِن كَانُوا صَادِقِينَ
Do they say he has improvised it? Rather, they have no faith. Let them bring a discourse like it, that is, the Noble Qur'an, if they are truthful. These two ayahs, like the previous ones, refer to the manifest truth and its denial by the disbelievers, who used to say that the Noble Qur'an has been forged by the Prophet and not revealed to him by God Almighty. This is indicative of their lack of faith. They were told that they are Arabs like the Prophet, and as the Noble Quran is in eloquent Arabic, they can make attempts and try to produce the like of it, but they cannot. Even if all of their scholars get together, since these are the revealed words of the Almighty Creator, and therefore matchless and unparalleled. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, it is obstinacy and intransigence that clouds reasoning and leads to denial of truth and wild accusations against the prophets and truthful persons. Number two, the Noble Quran, as the revealed word of God Almighty, is the manifest miracle entrusted to the Prophet of Islam, and therefore inimitable. And number three, if the intransigent deniers of truth do not believe in the divinity of the Noble Quran, they can get together and assemble their leading scholars to try to produce the like of it, but they cannot write even a page matching its flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom. Now we listen to ayahs 35 and 36 of Surah Tur in conclusion of this week's episode.
أم خلقوا من غير شيء أم هم الخالقون أم خلقوا السماوات والأرض بل لا يوقنون
Were they created from nothing or are they their own creators? Did they create the heavens and the earth? Rather, they have no certainty. Through these ayahs, God Almighty raises a number of questions in order to awaken the dormant conscience of the disbelievers by presenting the most significant philosophical discussions in the simplest form of expression. Since the fundamental rule of all sciences is that there is no effect if there is no cause. In other words, nothing can come into being out of nothing or by itself. These two blessed ayahs present two assumptions. Firstly, is the human race created for a cause or without it? And secondly, is it possible that mankind is able to create itself? Both assumptions fail to stand against reason. Since human beings are a phenomena, and every phenomenon is in need of a cause. Furthermore, mankind, which did not exist before, cannot cause its own existence. As reflected in Ayah 36, the polytheists were aware that God is the creator of them, the heavens and the earth. It is reiterated elsewhere in the Noble Quran that if the polytheists were asked concerning the creator of the heavens and the earth, they would rely that God is the creator. Thus, the main question presented in these ayahs is, why do you not believe in divine guidance instead of disobeying the prophets? The answer is simple. The intransigent disbelievers are not responding to the bidding of their own reason out of their vile disposition of mind and pursuit of vain desires, thereby failing to attain certitude regarding the omniscient and omnipotent Creator. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the Quran raises certain questions to open the minds of human beings so that they ponder upon facts and realities in a rational manner in order to refrain from obstinacy against truth. Number two, our intellect will help us when we are in pursuit of truth and not of vain desires or evil intentions. Number three, mankind is neither the creator of itself nor the creator of the world of existence. And number four, pondering on one's own self and the world around leads to God and certainty.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi made an official visit to Moscow on Wednesday at the invitation of his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. This is the first trip to Russia by an Iranian president since 2017. During a meeting in the Kremlin, the two sides set for talks on mutual and regional issues.
We have no limitation for expansion and development of ties with Russia and are after establishment of strategic relations with Moscow. We can expand our relations in economy, trade on the political track. We are not talking about momentary relations. We are talking about a sustainable and strategic relationship.
For his part, the Russian president said Iran-Russia's relations have been constantly improving. He also acknowledged Tehran and Moscow's contribution to Syria's transition past the terrorist threats.
Thanks to our efforts, we have largely succeeded in helping the Syrian government overcome the threats posed by international terrorism. Now, of course, both you and us are concerned about the situation that is developing in Afghanistan. I would like to discuss all these issues with you to know your position on these problems. And of course, it is very important for me to know your position on the JCPOA.
Iran's Raisi underlined that his country will never give in to the West's pressure, including the U.S., adding that Iran is seeking to remove the U.S. illegal and unilateral sanctions.
We have been confronting the U.S. for more than 40 years. We hope that these efforts would lead to removal of the sanctions. The threat of sanctions cannot come in the way of Iran's progress.
Ahead of the visit of Iran's Raisi to Moscow, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdollahian said that his country followed a new roadmap to deepen ties with Moscow, adding that Iran and Russia were determined to update a 20-year cooperation treaty that they signed in 2001.
This is Iranian president's third foreign trip since taking office in July last year. The visit is seen by observers as the latest efforts by Iran and Russia to cement stronger ties amid U.S. hostile policies towards both countries. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Bahrain has a tiny population of 1.7 million, but boasts the highest prison population per capita. Thousands of those are political prisoners. Every family has members who have done time, and the stories of torture and abuse are harrowing. Human rights organizations and defenders have been documenting them for years.
There is multiple evidence of torture for against both men and women who have been politically outspoken. And there are people who have been languishing in prison for 10 years now. Children who have had their teeth knocked out, they have been raped, they have had their genitals connected to electrical shock devices, car batteries or whatever, and have been driven around the villages, told that they would have their mothers or their sisters raped and violated if they did not snitch on their friends or the fellow villagers who would have been involved in the nightly protests against the continued abuse of fellow prisoners.
But this man, Omar Al-Hassan, the chairman of the Persian Gulf Center for Strategic Studies, has accused UK MPs and peers of making biased and fabricated criticisms of Bahrain. The kingdom's rulers are squirming in the wake of more and more criticism coming from Britain.
My lords, earlier this year I raised with the noble lord, Lord Ahmed, the detention of children in Bahrain following reports of their physical abuse and forced confessions.
My lords, a year ago this week, the Bahrain's courts upheld the death penalty for Mohammed Ramadan and Hussein Musa, following commitments made to do so in the other place by the Minister for the Middle East and North Africa. What representations has Her Majesty's government made to the government of Bahrain on the death penalty?
The GCSS says Bahrain's interventions show, quote, ignorance and disregard for the many achievements Bahrain has made and is proud of in terms of human rights. But the UK seems unfazed by this. The GCSS is notorious for defending Bahrain's human rights record, and its chairman, Omar Al-Hassan, stands accused of being in the pocket of the Bahraini embassy in the UK. According to Liberal Democrat Pierre Lord Scriven, the GCSS's claims